This is All Things Considered on 90.9 WBUR. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. That's a waltz by the Austrian composer Anton Diabelli. He wasn't well known, but his name was immortalized by a much better known composer, Ludwig van Beethoven. Curiously, Beethoven wrote 33 different versions of that waltz in a work known as the Diabelli Variations. And that piece of music is at the center of a play now showing at the Lyric Stage in Boston. With us to review it and several other shows at local theaters is WBUR's critic at large, Ed Siegel. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Sasha. Always great to see you.
Ed, I didn't know until I was getting ready to talk to you that this show has been on Broadway and was actually nominated for several Tonys.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It made a bit of a splash there. And, you know, the Lyric almost always does a first-class job with smart material like this that originated in New York. The play is by Moises Kaufman, and when it was in New York, it had Jane Fonda as a musicologist who becomes obsessed with why Beethoven, in the middle of writing his great Ninth Symphony in Missa Solemnis, would devote so much attention to Diabelli's little waltz.
But no Jane Fonda on stage in the Boston production, right?
No Jane Fonda, but you know, Sasha, you can't say that you ever lose anything, and maybe you even gain a bit when you have one of Boston's finest actresses, Paula Plum, as your star. Here she is explaining things.
In it, Beethoven instructs the pianist with the words, "Alla marcia maestoso," to be played in the style of a majestic march. I am fascinated that Beethoven...
Yeah, she could be my musicologist any day. And, you know, by going back and forth between Beethoven writing the piece and her talking about it, Kaufman does a great job of explaining how art can stop time in its tracks and find a rare, inspiring sense of transcendence, and that's why I like the play so much.
So profound stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Over at the Huntington Theater, there's now a theatrical version of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, the novel about race consciousness that at least used to be a staple of high school English classes. And I've read that this is actually the first stage adaptation of the book.
That's right. It's a play that began life in Chicago, and it's been tweaked a bit for Boston, but I had mixed feelings about it.
Why?
There's always a problem, I think, when you have a 600-page novel that you then try to turn into a play. And the Huntington does a great job of using all kinds of remarkable stagecraft to turn this into a play, but in the end, it's still a pretty discursive 3 hours. We're going to hear the beginning. Tegel F. Bouger is in the title role.
I am an invisible man. No, I'm not a spook like those that haunted Edgar Allan Poe, nor am I one of your Hollywood ectoplasms. I'm a man of substance, flesh, bone. And I might even be said to possess a mind. I'm invisible, understand, simply because people refuse to see me. They see only my surroundings, figments of their own imaginations, everything and anything but me.
So, you know, maybe you can tell from that opening that we're listening to a thoroughly honorable, respectful adaptation of Ellison's novel, which so vividly captured how African Americans were seen and not seen in the 1950s. And its champions would say that it also captures a more universal sense of dread about our standing in the cosmos, but I'm not so sure.
What is it that you think is problematic about the play?
It feels more like a history lesson than a play, partly because it reduces so many of the characters to stick figures. 3 hours is a long time in the theater, but it's not quite long enough to give the secondary characters here much nuance.
Another show with a runtime not quite that long, but still 2.5 hours, and which I saw just last night, is Other Desert Cities. Mm-hmm. This one opened last week at the Speakeasy Stage, which I believe is one of your favorite theaters.
It is. I think they've been on a great roll, and they have one of my favorite directors, Scott Edmiston, and three more of the best actresses in town, Anne Gottlieb, Karen McDonald, and Nancy Carroll. But this one didn't quite do it for me. It's not one of my favorite plays after seeing it.
So another not all that enthusiastic assessment, even though Nancy Carroll and Karen McDonald were a big hit last fall when they played these two brassy Southie ladies and good people at the Huntington. So what about Other Desert Cities fell short for you?
Well, I thought I was going to love the play. John Robin Bates is a fine playwright, and probably a better playwright than Kaufman, Moises Kaufman. But I just didn't buy the story of a lefty writer who intends to blow the lid off her Republican parents' facade. She blames them for driving her brother to suicide after an explosion that recalls one of the Weather Underground's anti-war bombings back in the 60s. Here's the writer, played by Gottlieb, and she's delivering the play to her parents, played by McDonald and Munson Hicks, on Christmas, no less.
Cheerful holiday. Holiday surprise.
Holiday cheer.
You want us to brace ourselves, which is why you didn't mention it earlier. You thought we couldn't handle it?
No! I had to finish writing it to know what I had to make sure and to sit with it.
Well, it's not entirely unexpected. May I ask what's in it?
Actually, probably the more piquant question is, what's not?
Piquant. there'll be a big revelation a little later, and that actually feels like the phoniest part of the play, which to me never really felt real at all, despite an excellent production, really.
Ed, anything good you want to play us out on?
Well, yeah, you can't get much more upbeat than Duke Ellington's Take the A-Train, which is used in Invisible Man.
Which, again, is playing now at the Huntington.
That's right.
Go to WBUR.org for these and other reviews by our critic at large, Ed Siegel. Ed, thanks for coming to the studio.
Thank you, Sasha.